Accession number 28675, Mr. Eric Smith, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Smith?
At North Finchley.
What was the date?
20th of April, 1920.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background in North Finchley?
Father was manager of an old grocer's called Cullen's. You may have heard of them. They had many shops in London at that time. And he had this ambition of starting on his own. And in 1929... he had a serious, which was serious in those days, pneumonia. And he was given time, thought he was going to lose him. Anyway, the doctor said to him, really, you ought to be an outdoor job. And Cullen's offered him a job at Eastbourne, which I didn't know till later. He refused. So he came out here in 1930, and next door was a bungalow, which has since been demolished.
And this is Well End?
Well End, yes. It was Well End Barn. Well End Bournemouth now, of course. And he started on his own with greengrocery, with a horse and cart. And my ambitions, I was always mechanically minded. I couldn't...
And did he make a success of it?
Oh, yes. But apart from what people said, it was a good living, but not a fortune. You worked hard and got quite good rewards. But yes, oh, yes. He had a horse and cart, and I did when I left school at 14.
So he was really... The family were reasonably comfortably off.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, yes. We had food on the table and clothes on our back, which in those days, in the 20s, we were very lucky.
Now, what about your education? Tell us a bit about your education.
I only went to a secondary modern or a little count. Went to Finchley School at first, of course, until I was 10. We moved out here when I was 10. So that's 78 years this August since I moved out here. And we used to have to walk to school 2 miles at Shenley, which was an Alderley Council school. And all we really learnt, there was no gymnasium, no sports, nothing. All we learnt was the 3 R's. We had to read properly, write and arithmetic. And the headmaster was very strict about it.
Did you enjoy school?
Not really, no. I caned every day, mostly. I suppose I was a naughty boy, but we used to walk from here, and if it was pouring with rain or snow, my mother would say, wait a little bit, it'll give, because when we got to school 9:05, you got 4 cuts of the cane for being late. And then, of course, your hands were stunned, and trying to use the old pens with a loose nib and, water ink, you'd make a blot, and you'd get cane again. So he was very, very strict, very.
And there's no sort of subjects other than reading, writing, everything.
Gardening, that was the main emphasis.
Did you like gardening?
I enjoyed it there, yes. We used to grow produce and sell it to help the funds, prune the apple trees. And he, of course, was very keen. He was a Yorkshireman, very keen on the... And also, we had many, many, many talks. He was in the infantry in the First World War, the Shropshire Light Infantry. So, of course, he used to often read the Riot Act to us about being smart, clean and disciplined. But, very strict.
Now, did you have any big hobbies outside of school before you...
Work only. I used to come home and help with the chickens. We had 1,000 chicken at the back. And I used to... muck out the houses, creosote.
Is this the same house?
All this ground was one bungalow. The 3 plots there were, and they all went with that one bungalow. Yeah.
So you do lots of work with the chickens?
A lot of work. I say creosote in outside, lime wash inside, generally speaking. From the age of 10, and then on weekends, he would take a horse and cart to Finchley, which is 8 miles, and expect me to go with him, which I did. So I had no sort of free life whatsoever.
And what about your interest in mechanics? I thought you said you were interested in...
Very mechanically minded, yes. I couldn't get to drive quick enough. In 1938, when I was 18, I took the test at Watford, passed luckily first time, and was in my pride and joy with an old post office van, which I gave £12 for. But when I left school, our neighbour... was had a good job at de Havilland's at Hatfield. And he could have got me in there as an apprentice, but my parents wouldn't let me go.
So what did you do?
Just greengrocery, yes.
So you just...
to cry myself to sleep and so forth, you know.
So when you left school, you just came into the family building?
Straight away, yes. I was given a horse and cart, a pair of scales and a money bag, and on your way. And I did that until I was called up in 1941.
So you didn't enjoy that?
I did not, no.
So you did it, what, from 34? When you were
34 to 41.
Now, what about the outbreak of war? Do you sort of remember the outbreak of war?
Yes, very much so. The day, yeah, the Sunday, yeah.
What do you remember of it?
Well, we were outside and a policeman came along. And chap I knew from Shenley, because we had plenty of local bobbies on his bike. He won't be here much longer, he said. You'll soon be in uniform and do what we did in the First World War. And that was the Sunday. As boys, we were cycled a lot. And, of course, the first night or two, searchlights would be sweeping the sky, and we used to cycle around trying to find them, because they were miles away. But, yeah, and then I joined the AFS, the Auxiliary Fire Service. I was in that 18 months.
Now, when did you join that?
I joined that in October 1939.
Right. I'll come up. What about air raid precautions before you joined? I mean, did you have a shelter? I mean, it's pretty
out of the way. No, we hadn't shelter, no. But we had a shelter. They erected a shelter down the road, and we used to do fire watch. Four boys when used to share it.
When you were with the AFS?
When I was in the AFS, yes.
All right, let's go on to the Auxiliary Fire Service. Tell us what you did with the Auxiliary.
Well, I was one of the only four that could drive, and we had an old Vauxhall car with a trailer pump. And twice a week we would do exercises. There's a pond about a mile from here. We used to go and drop the pipe in there, had a little Coventry Climax engine, and pump the water and scale the ladders and general muck about. But at night we used to have to do fire watch. And of course we
now
had a shelter.
Tell us about what was a typical fire watching night?
Well, to report where bombs fell. We had a telephone, little old handled telephone. We used to ring the headquarters at Shenley and tell them if you thought any idea where the bombs went down. Particularly one night when they dropped landmines on Barnet, we were able to sort of more or less spot where they dropped. And generally keep in touch what was happening. Incendiaries dropped round here and two bombs, that's all.
And what did you do when that happened?
One at the top of the road. Of course we were on the scene and went up there, but it fell into open ground, fortunately. Made sure people were okay, etc. But otherwise, no, nothing much happened. But I did that until I got my papers.
Did you have a uniform? Or
yeah,
anything?
Oh yeah, uniform. And a,
what was
you know,
a uniform?
Well, it was like a strong overalls, really, with a belt and a hat. I've got a photograph upstairs of it, you know, yeah. We had the peaked hat and an axe in your belt, etc. All we had down here was one of those, you've probably seen, an antiquated pump that you pushed up and down. Yeah,
a stirrup pump?
Yeah, bigger than that. For incendiaries, we had a shovel and sand to put on incendiaries. Incendiaries dropped across these fields quite often, you know. Pretty hectic, though, because we've quite a few AK-AT guns in Borehamwood. They used to fire and then dodge in that tunnel at Borehamwood out of the way, so it was quite lively. But I think altogether we only had about five bombs drop in the area.
And what would a typical night be like? I mean, would you just be out watching all the time? Or
yeah, we'd be sitting in the shelter. You had to keep on duty all night, not go to sleep. One would lay down on the bunk bed in the
so
shelter.
What was the shelter like? Where was it? And what was it like?
Outside the pub down here on the open ground, just an Anderson shelter. That's all. And one lady, whose husband was a fireman at Shenley, used to brew up for us during the night. At 2 o'clock, Mabel would come out with a tray of tea, and we used to get a tea and sugar allowance, of course.
And but nothing much happened other than what you could
Not
see.
Really, no. I'd say about five bombs, as I can recall. He dropped a stick one day on the way to Shenley, and a few incendiaries, nothing much else.
Now, how did the rationing affect your greengrocing business?
I mean, things were very short. I mean, all we had normally was vegetables. Fruit dried up, except for homegrown. But bananas, oranges, lemons, grapefruit were things of the past. So it was quite difficult, really.
And how did the rationing system work with the potatoes and things? I mean, was
Well, strangely enough, through the war, potatoes were never rationed. They weren't rationed until after the war. And basic things you could get, all the vegetables, etc. And I used to, by that time I was driving, I used to do a round in Borehamwood, door to door, 4 days a week. No, it didn't really, wasn't a lot to sell. We'd always got eggs, which was great. People were only allowed so many eggs a week, but you could always let them have one or two more sort of business. Yeah.
And anything else happening during these years, or any stories of things that happened?
While I was home.
Yeah, just anything happened, anything particular?
Nothing of any consequence, I don't think.
So tell me how you came to... I mean, you were 19 in 1939. How were you called up?
I had a year's deferment being self-employed.
Now tell me about that. Well, I mean, how did you arrange that?
Well, I had to go before a tribunal at North Finchley. There's several old codgers sat on the board, old army men, I think, and they gave me 6 months, and they gave me another 6 months.
What did you have to say to persuade them to give you the deferment? I mean, what were your arguments?
Sorry, just that a business would go. Once I went, it would, you know, my part of the business would go. In the end, of course, my sister took over from me. But that was all. They gave me 2 6 months, as I say, and then it went up again, and I should have been called up in 1940. Because it weren't, in those, people deny it and say 18, and it wasn't the early part of the war, it was 20 when you were called up. And I wasn't called up until I was 21, May 1941.
Now tell me about the call-up. What exactly happened?
Just a letter through the post. I went up to London, King's Cross, and did a medical. And all they did, there was no x-rays or anything like that. It just said sit on a chair and tap me knees and hearing, more or less basic. And then about 3 weeks later, I got a letter saying, will you report to the Royal Tank Regiment, Train Regiment at Farnborough?
Now, how had you been picked for them? Do you know how they've got you?
No. We all dreaded going to infantry, but there was, unless you volunteered, you had no choice.
And you knew right away it was going to be for the Royal Tank?
Straight away, yes. Royal Armoured Corps, actually, yeah.
So, tell me, where did you have to go again? You went in May
1941. Yeah.
Where did you go to?
Farnborough, Hampshire.
Do you know which barracks or...?
They've gone now, of course. Ellis Barracks, I think they were called.
Ellis?
Ellis, E-double-L-I-S, after a general. Or else I'm wrong, Pinehurst. That's right, Pinehurst Barracks, but it was called Ellis Quarters because of this general from the First World War. So Pinehurst.
Pinehurst Barracks. And what exactly were you joining? What was the training part of the Royal Armoured Corps you were joining?
Basic drill.
No, but what was it called? Did the unit have a name?
Oh, the 55th Training Regiment, RAC. But was under the RTR. In peacetime, it was the peacetime depot of the 2nd Royal Tank Regiment at Farnborough.
Now, what happened when you arrived? You know, you arrived as a civilian.
Right on a Thursday, yes, that was a call-up day, as a civilian. You checked in and documented.
How did they receive you? You know, because you're a civilian, you know, and it's the army. How did they sort of bring you in?
They were quite good, really. We filed through, of course, and they took your particulars and then took us, and we were, it was a camp that had expanded, but they'd just built a lot of married quarters, so we were stationed in houses, and we used to have to walk a mile from the main camp to these houses, and there were two NCOs, a corporal and a sergeant.
Now what were the houses like?
Oh, modern, sort of modern houses, yes, three bedrooms.
And how many men?
About 15 to a house, with mattress on the floor, you know, there's no beds or anything like that. And one of the houses was used as the quartermaster stores, where they gave us our uniforms and eating gear, etc. We used to have to walk down the main camp for food.
Now, what about your kitting out? What do you remember about your kitting out when you arrived? What did they actually give you?
Oh, uniform, overalls, boots, knife, fork, spoon, shaving brush, toothbrush. And what they call a housewife, which was a sewing kit to put your buttons on and darn your socks. That was all, really. A berry, of course.
You said a uniform. What was the uniform?
Ordinary battle dress, yes. And denim overalls.
Did it fit?
No, we had to have it changed at the quartermaster's and pay for the alteration. That was stopped out of your 4 bob a day. Yeah, same with haircuts. We were stopped 4 months a week for a haircut. Yeah, but there were two NCOs, a Corporal Bailey and a Sergeant Curry, and they were marvellous NCOs, regular soldiers.
Now what was so good about them?
Well, they were strict but fair. Some of them were useless, but they were two good men.
What were the useless? What was wrong with the useless ones?
Well, I don't know, what would you call them useless? as we were saying, the army full of bullshit. They weren't very. These men were sort of real soldiers who'd been in the Quetta disaster in 1926. Indian men, and they, as I say, they were very, very strict. They were soldiers, but they're very fair. They drilled us, these two.
Did you do lots of shouting, or was it?
Oh yes, swearing and shouting. Yes.
Did you mind that?
Not, well, I suppose we accepted it after a while, because they what always amazed me, they never forgot what you did in civvy life. So they used to say to me, you'll never make an effing soldier. All you're effing fit for is to sell cabbages. That was it.
Now, if we look at a typical day, we'll pick up the training off that. So what time would your day start?
6 o'clock, PT. There was no gymnasium there, so we used to run to Frimley every morning. Do just run, that's all. Come back and have breakfast.
So how was that? Just that was your PT, was running?
That's all we did to Frimley. There were no gym. We didn't use a gymnasium because we were out of the main camp.
So it was just a run?
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you find that? Were you fit enough for it?
I think so, yes. We were fairly fit, yeah. And I'd had an active job, you know. I'd been busy on rounds, door to door. So I didn't mind it at all, really.
Now, what about the food? Well, you know, picking up breakfast. What was the food like?
Not bad there, no. Basic, of course, obviously, rationing. But you'd have a breakfast of perhaps an egg and slice of toast, or be two or three slices of white bread and a big mug of tea. Yes, porridge if you wanted it.
What for lunch?
Tiffin, as they called it, the old Indian word. Lunch would be corned beef, bread and butter. And then you'd have an evening meal.
What would the
evening meal would be? A sausage and mash, or steak and kidney pie. Quite good, really.
No problem. Enough of it?
Oh, yes, yes. We were hungry because, I say, we were active. But there was enough, yes.
And it was reasonably presented.
It was, yes, I can say that, yes.
Now, you've had the PT session, you had your breakfast. What sort of training session would you be on in the morning then?
Well, then we'd come back, and for the first few weeks we did drill.
Now, how did you take to drill?
Well, I was a bit too left feet at first. He used to say to me, you're like a bee-ruptured chicken. Anyway, and the rifle on your shoulder, and that used to be around the back of my neck, you know. They would come up and reposition it and shout at you. But, as I say, in all fairness, they were two good NCOs. The only sad part was I was only there 3 weeks.
Did you get the hang of drill at all?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Left incline, right incline, change step on the march, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Did you understand the point of it then? Or now?
Now I do, because it was discipline.
Did you understand it then?
Not really, no. But discipline is like in action. You wouldn't stay and fight if you weren't disciplined. You were frightened of the consequences if you ducked out.
Now, so what other morning training sessions would you have?
Well, then you would go back down and do map reading.
That does about map reading. What did that entail?
Well, you'd look out over open ground and try and estimate the distance and general contours in the country, etc. like that, yes. No, we didn't have any driving or anything at Farnborough. Brain gun training we did. A pistol, revolver shooting.
Well, tell us about the weapons training generally. So, which you start with, a rifle, I suppose.
Started with a revolver.
So, tell us about that, revolver training. What sort of revolver training did you get?
We had a 4.5, and we used to go down and shoot on a range. But it was what they called in the tank, was a self-preservation tool, gun. I mean, no accurate. You can't fire at anybody like you see John Wayne and go. If a revolver, you can only shoot a few yards, really, with accuracy, and it's always inclined to jump as you fire. So that was for sort of self-use, and all the crew carried a revolver.
And did you get much practice on it?
Not a lot, no. Basic.
So what about, what was next then? Rifle?
Rifle, yes.
And what rifle?
That was mainly for ceremonial drill, sort of presenting arms, shoulder arms, all that kind of business.
You didn't get to fire them?
Once, that's all, I fired a rifle.
And
then we did Bren. I never fired a Bren, but we did training on the Bren. And then you had to strip it down, blindfolded, and put it back together again. That was one of the tests.
How hard was that?
Quite difficult, really.
But you never fired the Bren?
I never fired a Bren, no.
So what about bayonet
No, never had a bayonet.
So it's really just revolver. And
that's right, for tank crew, yes.
Now, what else? What other training sessions might you have?
PT, of course, two sessions a day, 45 minutes in a gym.
So what was that like?
Pretty strict, pretty tough, yeah. Climbing ropes, jumping the horse, being not used to it, yes, it was. And they were very, PT instructors were a class of their own, you know, they were.
What way?
Well, I always think now perhaps they were homos. Women, feminine voices, funny little blokes. But they gave us a dog's life, worse than anybody. We were scared stiff of the gymnasium. But we did 2 45 minutes a day.
Did it improve your fitness?
Cause you were really it must have done. And we did 2 45 minutes a day of drill.
Now, anything, this is your basic training. Anything else in basic training?
No, that was general discipline and drilling. As I say, I was only at Farnborough 3 weeks.
Now, how did you get on with the other recruits?
All right, yeah, we had some nice chaps, yeah. I met several nice chaps.
Were they from the same sort of background as yourself?
One was a window cleaner, one was a bus driver, one was a chemist. Stanley, I remember their names. Stanley was the chemist. Barry Sullivan was on the Walthamstow Gazette or something. Yeah, we got on very well. Nice
chaps.
No
bullying then?
No bullying, no.
And different parts of the country or mostly Londoners?
Mostly London, yes. Yes, as I say, the bus driver, he had been a regular and he'd been recalled to the colours, so he was retraining.
And what about sort of bull generally? Did you have to prepare for kit inspections and things
like
that?
Oh yeah, lay out your kit on the bed.
How would you prepare? What would you have to do to your uniform, your shoe, your boots rather, to get them ready?
You had to sort of blacken them, obviously, and polish them. We used to do spit and polish as they got...
What's that mean?
A toothbrush handle with a bit of... Scrape the polish out the tin and then spit on the toe of the boot and rub it in with the spit till you got them and you could see your face in them. Just the cap, but the shoes. And underneath, of course, the welt, you had to make sure that... And on the kit inspection, they were upside down, your boots. And your mesh tins burnished and... Knife, fork and spoon and all your shirt and clothes all laid out, you know, very strict. And they'd, like they've seen it, you've probably seen it in a film, they'd come along if it wasn't, they'd just flip a stick and throw it on the floor. So it'd be humiliating, really, but a part of discipline, which I realised in battle, was necessary.
And you didn't mind the bull?
Not really, no. I was used to discipline at home and was kept clean my shoes and things at home, so I was brought up pretty strictly.
Now, anything. What about recreations in the evening? Would you have a canteen or anything?
A naffy and a Salvation Army, yes.
What were those canteens? What did they offer you as a young man?
Darts, billiards, tea and a wad, as they called it, a cake. Fine.
Was the naffy one a wet canteen or, you know, did it serve beer?
No. Didn't have any beer.
No.
No, especially the Sally Army, but they were better than the naffy we found, the Sally Army. And once or twice a week, you'd be lucky to queue up and get a Mars bar, which was quite a luxury. And, of course, when they'd close the door and start hymn singing, of course, about 90% would bail out, you know, they're not going to stop for that. But the naffy you could get... They weren't allowed to serve in the day food because of the army food, but at night you could get a sausage, different things like that, a little pie you could buy if you had enough money.
Now, was there anything, would you get out into Farnborough at all, or were you allowed out?
Now that weekend, very good actually, because I'd only been there a fortnight and I came home for the Sunday, coach from Farnborough up to Victoria. So I came home for a day. I'd only been in the army a fortnight and brought me civilian clothes back. Yeah.
Would you go for a drink in Farnborough or did you not drink?
I didn't drink in those times, no.
Not so you're teetotal?
I was then. I wasn't allowed by my father.
So would you go into Farnborough or not?
Aldershot we used to go on a Saturday.
What was that like?
Quite troops, of course, but yeah, quite good. One chap I was friendly with, his brother was in the dental corps, so we used to go and visit him.
So what would you do in Aldershot? It's an army town, of course.
Oh, yeah. Or just perhaps walk around, go and have a tea or coffee, if anywhere was open. And
cinema?
Cinema, oh, yeah, cinema. Actually, at Farm Road, there's a cinema next to the camp, the Rec, so we used to go in there once a week. Also, too, if you were lucky enough, you'd be on fire picket, so you'd be on the roof of the cinema, and you're able to pop down and have a look at the film. There was no radon.
Anything else about... You weren't there long.
Three weeks, that was so all, unfortunately.
Just into June?
Yeah, beginning of June.
And what happened then? What?
Well, the sergeant, as I say, Sergeant Curry, he came on parade this particular morning, and in his usual manner, he said, "I've got some good news for you lot. You don't like the army, do you?" "No, no," he said. "But let me tell you something. You lot are going to Catterick in Yorkshire. And when you get there, you'll realise what the army's like. You'll look back on this camp and think it was a bee holiday camp." How true his words were. We went to a cavalry depot at Catterick, 1519th Hussars.
That was the unit. Was it the training regiment?
Training regiment, yeah, 51st.
So it's the 51st training regiment.
That's right, Catterick. St Oswald, it was called, Oswald Lines.
Now, what was your first impression when you got to Catterick then, after you journeyed down?
Well, we went by train from Farnborough to Richmond, Yorkshire, and then onto the platform and lined up, and then marched to Catterick Camp, which was about 2 miles, and received there and put into barrack huts. And
was it immediately apparent it was a stricter place?
Oh, yes.
In what way?
Discipline was very stricter. Code of dress. Before you went out the camp, you had to look in a mirror. NCOs were very officious. Shout, scream and swear. Dreadful. The training sergeant on the square was a horror. And we realised what the sergeant had said at Farnborough, that how true his words were.
Now, what training were you doing there?
Well, we'd only been there a week, and the army had changed the pattern. After 6 weeks training in the Royal Armoured Corps, you were given a week's leave. So about the middle of June, I came home for a week's leave. Then when I went back, they got all our record and they said, "Well, you've done the Bren, you've done this and that." And we did a bit more on the Bren. I say, taking it apart and putting it together, blindfolded. Drill, a lot of drill, and a lot of PT at Catterick. Big gymnasium, wall bars, climbing the ropes, etc.
So basically continuation training.
Yeah, more or less, yes. Up until the middle of July. And then we started serious training for a trade, whatever you thought you'd like to do. We did gunnery.
Now what trade did you think you wanted to do?
Driving, being a driver, I opted the easy way and said I'd be a driver.
So what training did you have?
Well, they sort you out into sort of six people and paraded you in front of the hangars on a 1,500 weight guy truck. And the NCO said, "Right, anybody has driven before they came in the army." So clever Charlie puts his hand up, take a pace forward, and he comes up to me grimacing. He said, "You can't be well drive, we'll learn you the army way. Get back in the ranks." So six of us pile into this truck.
Who's a guy, you say?
A guy, G-U-Y, they've long gone now, of course, had a gearbox that you could play God Save the King in between putting the gears in. It used to crash gearbox, of course.
Double-declutch,
yes. And we'd go out onto the moors, drive down the lanes round Yorkshire, pull into a village somewhere, and again, have a cup of char or wad.
And what was a guy lorry like to drive? Truck?
Oh, it wasn't bad to drive. I'd driven an old Morris van, so I was more or less quite good. I thought myself I was quite good at it. But when he said to me, "Get back in the ranks and we'll learn you," I got in with a lance corporal in this truck with six people, and he said, "Well, you can drive. Well, you can go first." So we'd driven a mile or two, and he said, "Halt." He said, "You're wasting my B time." So I said, "Well, I told the sergeant I could drive." He said, "Well, get in the back and let somebody who can't drive have a go." So for the rest of the 6 weeks, I laid on the moors. For 6 weeks, I didn't do anything during it, apart from a bit of drill.